Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show with Aaron, and on the line I've got John Lawson. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
You've managed in the short time available to do your standard summary. It's not. It'll probably turn up on Raglan 23 today, I guess, if people want to read it.
I think, yes. It's also linked from our Raglan Community Radio Facebook page, so anyone who's interested in looking at that summary can go there and click on the link, and it takes you to a Google document.
So you've started off with some items removed from the agenda. Why have you put those in, John?
I thought it was interesting that they're not covering some of these things or asking for updates on them, which rather puzzles me because I've just got a note back about the Manu Bay planting, for example, and that's still of interest to some people, and they want to know what's going to be planted and where it's going to be planted and when it's going to be planted, and yet the community board have taken it off the agenda.
Is that the staff or the board takes it off?
It was a minute of the last meeting, because we haven't had the February minutes of the community board either up until just now, and they show that these items removed from the agenda.
Okay.
So that's where this list comes from.
While you're talking about planting, John, I just want to leap in because it's reminded me that there was supposed to be some planting just across the walk bridge to the left there where the water has been eating away at the coastline basically since the old bridge was removed, and there was supposed to be planting done there to help restore stability last year, I think. That hasn't been done, has it?
No, that's another mistake of mine. I should have listed it on the things that haven't been done. I've put a long list at the bottom of what hasn't been done, but yeah, that ought to be on it as well.
Yeah, I mean, we know COVID has like thrown the spanner in many different works, so we'll put it down to that till we find out otherwise. But I just wanted to mention that because I've just remembered it. And if you go down there and look at the way the land's been eaten away, it actually feels like a thing of some urgency.
Yeah, well, it's odd what COVID affects and what it doesn't. So it doesn't seem to have affected the fencing of the airfield.
It's hard to forget about the airfield, John.
They seem to have pushed. Well, that's one of the things being taken off the agenda. So apart from this mention in the minutes, there's nothing in the agenda about Raglan Aerodrome. Even though back in December, the minutes said that the community board was going to be given a complete breakdown of the fencing costs, and they've never been given that. And probably to keep it up to date would be a pretty difficult job because the fence has been cut yet again.
Well, yes, you can't. There's no such thing as a complete breakdown on the fencing yet, is there?
It's an ongoing cost. And the ridiculous thing, it seems to me, is that it's cost way more than they're asking us to pay with our $72 a year for the food waste rate. And it seems to me if the council can afford that sort of money to keep an airfield open, then they definitely ought to be able to afford it to keep a food waste collection going. So,
yeah, I need to be a fly on the wall of the thinking with the council managers on this one, because it is them that's driving it, not the community board, who they've said they would prefer not to have the fence. Why they keep pushing, I've said this before, one of the managers said at a community board meeting a couple of board meetings ago, I can't remember when, that they looked at closing the airfield and then decided they couldn't because you have to have a long notice period. Of course, it has since been closed temporarily. So if I'd had access to them, I would have been like, why don't you just keep it closed? But they seem determined to keep rebuilding the fence. So, yeah, a fly on the wall would be, I'd like to hear from him or her, that fly, to tell me what was going on.
Yeah, because one of the other odd things is that the councillors seem to think that they're fully informed, and yet, they seem to be making these odd decisions. Because I got a note back from the deputy mayor and I asked him if he'd look into it, and he said that he thinks the elected members have been kept well informed, but that councillors shouldn't be doing anything at the moment because there's a civil aviation authority and police involvement. My understanding is the police involvement is a couple of people have been taken to court for trespass and haven't, the court dismissed their cases. So, I'm just wondering how well informed they are, or whether in fact there's something going on that we don't know.
I think the elected representatives feel like it's out of their hands. The managers are implementing rules based on a report they've received and feel compelled to implement, which makes sense for within a bureaucracy to be doing that. Police have been involved, and elected representatives never want to get involved in the middle of that. So, and probably everyone's hoping it will go away. Frankly, I'm hoping it will go away too. I've heard too much about the airfield in the last few months.
Yeah, well, there's no reason why it should ever have been an issue, because it was never a problem. That's the weird thing about it, that they're spending so much money on it, and yet.
I'm not surprised if the council receives a report from an expert describing a situation where there's potential loss of life. They have to act on it. Like, I'm not surprised on that. Nobody should be surprised that they decided to act on it. But what's happened since then, and the fact that they could have actually closed the airfield, which is the community's, seems to be the community's wish anyway, and they could have closed it temporarily, done some consultation, and then declared it closed permanently. There are all sorts of options, but I feel like everyone's at loggerheads. And
this is in contrast with the way that they deal with other things, though. So, and Chris Rayner on the community board has been going on for ages about the junction of Government Road and Bayview Road and Simon Road, and the giveaway sign there, and changing it to a stop sign.
Well, no, I think it's the same, because he's fighting bureaucracy there as well.
And except bureaucracy in this case is ignoring the fact that there have been crashes in 2007, 2019 and 2021.
Well, I don't know what the update is, but at the previous time this was discussed at the community board meeting, staff didn't have data. They said they didn't have data, so they're not going to act if there's no data.
The data shows those three crashes, so.
Well, yeah, but they didn't have it then. I don't know what's happened since then, though, John, so your point is still very much alive.
Well, that data has been available publicly for, ever since 2021. So, you know, quite where do they get their data? If I can find it, surely they can. It just seems really weird that in the one place on the airfield there are no crashes, except into the fence at the end where they're now sending people around. And yet this road junction where there are crashes, they say, oh, we can't do anything about it. We've got to find some data, which, as I say, has been publicly available for over a year.
Well, we talk about bureaucratic inertia, but there is another thing, a concept I'd like to introduce, which is bureaucratic momentum. And we've got bureaucratic inertia with what you're talking about there, but the airfield thing is the momentum's up and they can't stop. And I think that's, you know, like, it's hard to get bureaucracies to do things, but once they start, it's impossible to stop them. It kind of feels like that.
But surely that's what elected members are there for, isn't it? To intervene and say, hey, you're not doing this the way people want. This is absolutely stupid.
I'm not going to say it's absolutely stupid. If the bureaucracy has a report that says that they must fence it from an expert, they're going to do it. Like, this is the one thing where I disagree with most of Raglan, is I'm not surprised that they've acted on it. It's entirely expected and entirely logical that they would. The fact that we disagree, I don't agree with putting the fence up. I'm just saying this is very par for the course.
On Bayview Road, do we? And
I don't know, John.
On getting a report.
I don't know, but we're going to get an update from John, and I can argue. We're kind of debating it really, because we haven't got enough info. But we are going to hear from Chris Rayner about that at the community board meeting tomorrow.
Chris's job was to go away and find the statistics, and as I say, they're publicly available on the transport agency website, so it's not very difficult to find them.
So presumably he's done that and he's put it in front of the right person at council and had a response. So I guess we'd look forward to seeing more info about that.
Mm-hmm. But if you're right and it needs a safety report to get anything done, then it just seems to be putting bureaucracy mad. And Chris compared it with the way that they did Cliff Street, and they claimed that Cliff Street was dangerous and therefore needed to be one way. And the response they've got from that is that all it needs to change a street to one way is to change a schedule in the public spaces bylaw, which I think is wrong, but I mean, that's their excuse. On the one hand, they're saying, oh, you can't change a give way sign to a stop sign because you've got to do all sorts of consultation about it, but you can change a street one way without doing any consultation and just put it in a bylaw schedule.
I think the if I remember the detail, there's an issue that if the paperwork isn't done, the police can't act on it and can't enforce it. But I still, my first thought was, well, if there's a stop sign there, most people are going to follow it anyway, so it is an increase in safety. But I guess we'll have to wait and find out from Chris.
Yeah, so that might be an interesting debate tomorrow. We have at least got the link for the meeting, so the last time you rang me up and said, how do I get onto this? And I said, I don't know either. But this time we have Gabrielle again has been up with it and given us the link, which again is in that connection on the website, on the Facebook page.
So that's the link to the Zoom meeting, and it's got a public forum at 1:30 that anyone can talk to. So people can find that on our Facebook page, you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Eventually, hopefully, we'll be able to find out on the Raglan Community Board Facebook page. But when I last looked, that hadn't been changed. But so Gabrielle seems to have told us in advance of putting it on their own Facebook page, which is good.
Yeah, well, she knew we were on the air this morning.
Yep. And so, yeah, the other thing that's been removed from the list is Soundsplash. And I know quite a lot of people are interested in Soundsplash, either in keeping it or getting it back or
John, what did that relate to? Was that relating to year by year, or was that relating to the resource consent for their 5-year resource consent?
This is, as I understand it, the resource consent, because the community board was being kept up to date on where that was. Of course, it got transferred last year due to COVID to Mystery Creek. But I think quite a lot of people would like it back here. But equally, quite a lot of people are quite happy that it's not in Raglan anymore and with all that traffic disruption and such like. So I think it's something that ought to be out in the public to be debated and not taken off the agenda.
Well, it is. I mean, it's nice for us to have a debate, perhaps, but there are, like, the Resource Management Act has a set of rules that they apply under and standards they have to meet. So a lot of this is just meeting the legislative requirements, really, isn't it?
Well, I would have thought something like that should have been publicly notifiable, but yeah, and that's one of the reasons why the Resource Management Act is being reviewed, because quite a lot of things go through without any public notification. And
so you think it should be
massive red tape. So,
yeah, you think it should be, but it isn't, is what you're saying. Then that's the rule.
I think it's one of those marginal cases. I think probably the council could decide to consult on it if they were so inclined, but taking it off the community board agenda makes that less likely.
Okay, well, what will we do? We don't know. we'll see if something pops up.
But it depends whether people raise it in the public forum or send emails or...
Right, okay.
And yeah. The community board or whatever. So,
yeah.
I mean, all these things are down to what happens. And if there's lots of people feel strongly about these things and do something about them, things might well change. But if people don't, then they won't change. So,
okay.
Basically why we're talking about it this morning, to give people that opportunity.
All right. On your list, you've got a thing that I didn't know anything about. Upper Bow Street angle parking. Are we getting... That's the little stubby bit of stuff near the water tower, isn't it? Road.
Yes.
Stubby bit of road.
Well, it used to be part of Bow Street, but then back in the 1930s, they diverted Bow Street the other side of the water tower. Well, the water tower wasn't there in those days, but... So, yeah, that's that little stub of street that comes off Norrie Avenue. And I've got something in common with you there. I don't know anything about it either. I was surprised to see it on the agenda.
Why does it need angle parking? I go through there every morning on my way to work, and there's hardly ever a car parked down that street.
No, that's what puzzles me. So, you know, it stand for a verbal update, so we'll see what the verbal update is.
But maybe someone at council is referring to a part of the main Bow Street and they don't realise there's an upper Bow Street. Maybe that's what that is.
Maybe they don't know Raglan enough, well enough to know that there's also an upper Bow Street.
Yeah, there could be. All right, we'll leave that one. You want to talk about the shared cycleways and walkways and footpaths and things?
Yeah, well, one of the things that puzzles me is what's a walkway and what's a cycleway and what's a shared walkway, cycleway, because they seem to be using different terms all the way through. So one of the bits of good news is that the Wainui shared cycleway, which is going to be extended from the Rocket Cafe to the Poihakuna Marae starting next month and to be completed by June, is going ahead. That's going to provide cyclists as a safer way of getting to the Wainui Reserve and the beach.
So is that the last gap in that link all the way through to the Wainui Reserve from town?
Well, yeah, through to the Wainui Bush Park, which is another controversial issue. There's quite a few people in who use the bush park don't feel it should be a place to dodge people cycling. That there ought to be another route into the reserve. It's certainly not ideal because it's gravel and it's got quite a few hills and it goes up and down as well as just up.
So, John, this big, it's kind of a 2.5 metre concrete path. When it gets to the reserve, does it just deliver cyclists onto the tracks that are already in there?
Well, it's now on this agenda being called a shared cycleway, but so far I've not seen any cycle signs on it except one that says cyclist dismount.
I can't remember the details. Are they not going to build, continue that path all the way through?
Well, you can't remember the details because they've never given us any details. There have been various discussions. And
I've seen plans, but the map of the whole thing, but I cannot remember what happened at that point.
The only sensible thing to do is to take it off at the corner of the rear Kereopa Memorial Drive and Wainui Road and contour it up the hill from there. But that doesn't seem to have been carefully looked at all. So.
Okay, all right. So we're getting lost in the detail here. We don't know the answer to that, so we'll wait and see. The Greenslade footpath, is that the one that goes from the end of Greenslade Road through to Lorenzen Bay Road?
You skip past the Papahua one. One is one that you probably know more about than I do, but they were talking about getting the gravel off the soccer pitches. So presumably they've done that, have they?
I haven't seen any gravel on the soccer pitches. The Roosters men's team played a game there, not this weekend, but the weekend before on Saturday. Didn't see any gravel. The footpath's done. There's a lot of dirt put up sort of beside the concrete footpath that's supposed to smooth the ground down to the grass, but everything was so dry, it was just a bit of a crumbly mess. But it's done. The path is there.
Okay, so that's good news. Be interesting to see how many people use it because it goes a really weird route, weaving all over the place.
it does. But it kind of sort of swerves between the trees and what have you. But kids might enjoy biking on it.
Yeah, an extra obstacle course to get around.
Yeah.
which is rather like the Greenslade Road footpath where they've put a chicane across there.
I should say, to be fair to the council, that I think it's Ngāti Mahangaste, they didn't want the path going through the other side of the road there where it was going through past the Wenera monument, especially with that ground being eaten away on the coast there. So it has ended up on the other side of the road and having to dodge the toilet block, the soccer fields and a bunch of trees. So, yeah, that's how it ended up there.
Yeah, there are all sorts of other options that might have been possible, but anyway, it's done now. So,
I don't know if there were. What were the other options?
Well, the main option would be to narrow the road and put it on the road.
Yeah, that's a budget thing, eh? They weren't going to spend that money and mess up the road. Even though I agree with you, it's a good idea.
It's just been done with some cheap curbing. It would have cost a lot less.
Well, yeah, like you say, it's done. Let's move on. Can we go to the Greenslade footpath? Is that done? Do you know?
That is done, but they're still waiting for the vehicle barriers to be fabricated. What they've done is to put up a temporary couple of railings to act as a chicane on it.
On where? On the bridge?
Yes. Well, just either side of the bridge. Because the problem is that they've built it with a very tight bend on it, and the tight bend happens to go around the hill, so you can't see cyclists racing down the hill. And there was a potential for quite bad accidents there.
Did they bank the footpath so the cyclists can maintain their speed?
Oh, no, they've slowed the cyclists down by putting a chicane in.
Right, okay. That's probably more sensible.
It rather defeats the object of it, which is to encourage people to cycle across there.
Do you have to get off your bike to get through it?
No, it's not that bad, but you certainly have to slow down just as you're coming to the bottom of a hill, so then you haven't got that momentum to take you up the hill.
But you must have cycled through there, John. Like cycling on the grass bank after that bridge was not easy, so it's a vast improvement on what it was anyway, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's certainly better than it was, but it's not as good as it could have been. And the other puzzle there is that this is one of those that's labelled a footpath. So why do we have a shared walkway, cycleway on Wainui Road, but we have a footpath linking Greenslade Road to the Randwick Bay?
I'm going to call that a typo, John, because it's bikes are going to be going through there.
Mm-hmm. And there's also mention of a community planting day, so that shows the work that's been done by the volunteers in that area as well.
Okay, shout out to the volunteers.
Yep. State Highway 23, you were saying you'd heard that it was going to be west of Greenslade Road rather than east of Greenslade Road,
oh,
that we've got the new speed limit.
No. So I'm talking about the revocation. Eventually, the district council will own the road all the way past Greenslade. You go from town, going past Greenslade Road and around the corner. Eventually, the council will have all of that. But because there's a significant culvert work to be done, like they're talking more than $2 million to be spent, the council is just taking some of the road at this point and leaving the bit that still needs work with NZTA, who no doubt will take a very long time to do the work. So
the bit that's dangerous, because that so far there have been 9 crashes on the corner of Greenslade Road and the main road in the last 20 years or so.
Yeah, and council's been asking the NZTA, can we put a sign up, please? And they're like, no, we don't do that. It's not in our rules. And NZTA moves at the speed of the. I was interviewing Lisa, and she was like, you guys complain that the council's slow, but these guys are something else. Yeah, so the end result is we're changing to 60 kilometres an hour up to where Simon Tefiero's art gallery is.
Yep, which I say means that the most dangerous junction on it, I thought the whole objective of it was to sort that one out, isn't going to have that 60 limit.
Not yet. No, it can't because it's not – well, no, it can't. We have to wait for NZTA to do the work they're supposed to do.
It seems to me that reducing the rest of it to 60 is fairly pointless if you're not going to include Greenslade Road. But,
well, the people who live on the bit of, and I interview one of the people who lives on that bit of State Highway 23, which is now, I suppose, going to be called Main Road, they're pretty happy. The people whose the residential houses whose driveways go out onto State Highway 23, they're happy.
Okay, so maybe there's some improvement.
Yeah.
So what else have we got on the agenda?
Orca Crossing safety improvements? I don't know anything about that. What's that, John?
Well, this is something that was going to be part of the town square or...
Don't say town square. People get angry.
Yeah. It's something that's been around for a long time. As long as I've been keeping an eye on the community board, there's been mention of improving that corner, because an awful lot of people walk from Bow Street towards the footbridge, and that's one of the places that they cross.
It's very natural just to saunter across there after you've been down at the footbridge and the jetty in that area. You just kind of like cruise across. Feels like the natural thing to do, but yeah, there are cars coming.
Yeah, and the visibility in that area is pretty poor because an orca is in the way. Ideally, you'd demolish Orca and put a roundabout or something there. But
if roads were the most important thing, John, we would demolish Orca, but they're not, are they?
Well, not in my book, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought you'd say.
We're coming on to talk about parking on the next item. So there have been various ideas as to how this ought to be done. And again, it seems to be something which is really odd that the council isn't taking the initiative, but they're telling the community board to put in a service request. So, if, you know, when you look at the council's website and it's got that thing up at the top of it that says request it, and they're asking the community board to click on that and request that something is done about the crossing at Orca.
So that request is a thing that's open for every resident to make a request. You've got a pothole outside your house, you can request that it be fixed. So they've sent the community board down that route.
So maybe everyone listening needs to go to the website and click on request and ask for something to be done about the Orca crossing. Maybe we'll get it done that way.
Yeah, well, we might find out at the community board meeting tomorrow. All right, you want to talk about parking, John?
Yeah, well, again, another mystery, because apparently the community board sent a list to the roading engineer in October over a year ago, and the response has come back saying it's not being completed, there's no resources at present due to COVID impacts. And again, it's sort of this thing about some things get great priority and you can fence an airfield in very little time, but you can't put a stop sign instead of a give way sign, and you can't put parking signs, and you can't sort out the Rose Street parking, which is another issue. Again, no resources. So, you know, it just seems to me that the community board and our councillors and so on ought to have a look at some of these things and say, why are there resources for some things but there aren't resources for others?
I remember after COVID first hit in 2020, there was a big rejig of the budget. I know it did force that, and maybe roading got told you haven't got as much money and just cut some stuff out.
And the parking signs are pretty cheap.
And suck it up. Well, yeah, but still... It appears that they were the ones cut out. And I'm not saying that there aren't better priorities, you know, that they're not a higher priority than other things, but I'm just trying to give the background. I think that's probably what happened.
And the other thing is that we still don't know what the community board did send to the roading engineer, because the community board keeps having meetings without having the public there, and then I think they don't realise that they haven't told the rest of us what's going on.
All right. Are you going to ask that? Are you going to be in the open forum asking these questions, John?
It depends whether we can manage to get enough time to do it, because the open forum, in theory, now that it's part of the main meeting, is flexible and it could go on for a long time. But in practice, it's usually shut down after half an hour, and that doesn't leave time to ask all these questions or get answers for them.
Yeah, you might have more time this time, because just I know that there are less people turn up on Zoom, even if it's better advertised. I still think there'll be less people turning up.
Well, we'll see whether advertising rather better helps.
Yeah.
Because one of the other things that's not being covered is parking in general, because people keep saying, oh, I find it really difficult these days to find a park in town. Which isn't a problem if you've got a bike, but for those who drive, it is. And it seems to me that one of the things that gets put off all the time is looking at the parking issue, and either we need to sort out encouraging people to walk, cycle, whatever, into town, catch the bus, or we need to sort out some extra parking. And it seems to me that the only extra parking would be in the form of a multi-storey car park. And I don't know whether people want that, either in terms of the cost of it or the inconvenience of it or the look of it or whatever.
I know that won't be popular, John. I'm very certain.
But the lack of parking isn't popular either. So
here's the thing. Like, the background to this is that forever and a day, there were so few people in Raglan and so many parking spaces that you could always get a park. You look at those old photos downtown. But that has just changed in the last 10 years. And it's okay in winter right now. There's parks outside the town hall here over the road. But I kind of think we do have to accept that it's never going to be the same again. Having said that, council has put parks in around on James Street. But, yeah, it's never going to be the same again.
Which is why they need the parking signs that they can't afford.
Oh, yes. Oh dear, yeah, that. So that was. Oh dear, but the reason I'm going oh dear is because Clint Baddeley was trying to get those in, and when he was councillor. So
yeah, shows how long it is. Yeah,
yeah, that's a bit of a bureaucracy thing, isn't it? We got to lay that one there.
And the residents on Rose Street asked for something to be done about the parking there a long time ago. But
so, which is Rose Street? Is that the one that goes up from the silos?
Yeah, because people who are parking boat trailers and such like look around for the nearest place, and Rose Street is one of the nearest places. But of course, it's a very, very narrow street,
and cars get stuck. They park with one side of the car over the curb, and then they're getting stuck. I think the residents are saying, aren't they? Like, it's a bit of a mess.
So yeah, it's another thing which needs sorting out. And again, it seems to me down to our political representatives to sort out how resources are allocated, rather than just accept that there are no resources.
Well, you can say that, but I don't think they have that much power, John. In fact, we know they don't. They're an advisory board.
Yeah, but they could organise the community, because, as I say, if we all start going to the council's webpage and requesting things, then it's going to show up on their statistics, and that's one of the things that they do respond to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's an important insight for people to understand that, like, because the managers, they like to know what they actually want to know if the staff aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, and the way they do that is with the data that's coming in. And if you make a complaint or a request on the official form, then it goes into the system, and the managers can track it and chase things. There's potential for it to be chased up. So yeah, that's an important kind of bureaucratic insight, I guess, for people.
Yeah, because I found it one of the most effective ways of getting council to do anything, to go to that form and fill it in.
Mm. Yeah. Interesting, isn't it?
Because one of the other things which is happening is that they're putting tenders out for the wharf structural repairs, pontoons and walkways. And I've still not seen any detail of what they're putting tenders out for. I don't know quite what's being designed there or what repairs are being made.
Is it for the design work, though? Is that what the tender's for?
Well, again, we don't know. And it's one of these problems with having meetings which the community board claim aren't secret, but it seems to me they are secret, and talking amongst themselves and not telling the rest of us what's going on.
So first of all, I think we have been told. I think some of my interviews in the past, the answer to that question has been given. And the other thing is, John and I always have this debate about what's a secret meeting and what's not, and I don't think you're ever going to get, like, looking at the big picture, you're never going to get people to have every meeting minuted. People are always going to talk. It's a very human need to want to talk when you're not being watched, and I think that people just want to have discussions and get to know each other as well, which is important for a community board. I don't think they're trying to hide anything. I'm very sure of that.
So can you tell me what's being proposed for the structural repairs, pontoons and walkways?
No, because I can't remember what was said in my interview. That's the problem with me, is I don't remember all my interviews.
Yeah, and I don't remember hearing it on the interviews. I listened to most of them, but
yeah,
I'm not sure of that one. So.
I just have vague memories that it's been discussed. I should book an interview with Dennis Amor, who is the community board member who's had most to do with that.
Yep. Okay. Look forward to listening to that one.
Yeah.
We've also got the Manu Bay breakwater. This is one which lots of the fishing community has been up in arms about for a few years now, because they got their old breakwater repaired and they didn't like the repair.
No, and it has been problematic. Big boulders on the boat ramp, not a good thing.
And now we're being told that there's going to be a Zoom workshop on the 28th or 30th of March. So
I think some of the people don't like the Zoom workshop. They'd rather be in person. But that's problematic as well under the red setting, isn't it?
Yeah, well, lots of people don't like turning up at meetings under the red setting. So you can't win either way.
Yeah, and I think that's added to the delays.
One of the reassuring things is that they've now told us that the sewage overflows, which they've been reporting quarterly, are not in fact overflows. They're just blocked pipes.
Okay.
Which don't get round to overflowing. So that's why we haven't seen the big fuss about them.
Right. So, yeah, because most people will remember the huge fuss we had a while ago, and council did get on to reporting overflows. And we kept seeing them. We were like, maybe they're so small that they didn't really matter and wasn't an issue. Well, yeah, I guess a blocked pipe is small.
They say many of these are just on private properties and they're reported by the plumbers who unblock them. So that's, as I say, a reassuring explanation of what that one means, which...
Yep.
Quite why they called them wastewater overflows in the first place. I'm not too sure when they're really blocked pipes, but anyway,
yeah.
we now know. lots of things seem to be covered by verbal updates, so we're not able to say any more until we hear what's going on tomorrow.
Yeah.
So one of those is civil defence, which seems to me to be more important than just to have a verbal update. And
what do we know about that, John? We know there's a staff member who's trying to prepare a plan. I mean, it's very...
They've been trying to prepare the plan, and I think Bob McLeod was pushing that strongly several years ago. So, you know, it's one of those things which seems to me to be important. But, you know, if we do have a major flood, a tsunami or whatever, then we ought to know how we're going to cope with it. And if we haven't got a civil defence plan, we don't.
Yeah, well, I know that we, as the radio station, are equipped to broadcast in an emergency. Like, I know that. So if there's people making decisions somewhere during that emergency, then we can get the information out to people. But I don't know. Yeah, we don't know who those people are or where they'll be. Or not. Actually, the answer to where they'll be is depends on the emergency.
Yeah.
If it's a tsunami, they'll be up a hill. If it's an earthquake, depends what's still standing.
Which is why we need a plan. So
yeah. Yes, good point.
Parts of the plan are there, in that the radio's there and ready and waiting for whatever happens, but is everything that connects with it there? So, and how does it connect? And that's why we need a plan.
I tell you what, John, if there was someone in the community who feels concerned about this and wants to become a person who pushes it, that would be good, because it was Bob McLeod doing it and he's since passed. So having someone to champion an issue in the community is quite important, I think, to something like this. And I'm not sure that we have that at the moment. So if there's anyone out there listening, or that's someone who knows someone, that would be a great thing for the community.
Yep. We were just talking about parking and the problem of not being able to find a park. And one of the solutions is to get people using buses rather than cars. But again, that's a verbal update. Though I do see that Lisa's been along to a public transport business review workshop, so she might have something to say about that. Mm. It's one of these many workshops which the council runs these days, which aren't available to the public and don't get minuted. So
was that one not available? They had a housing workshop that was live on YouTube to a big audience of two people, but it's still there. Like, you can go and check it out. So was that one not on YouTube?
Okay. I only got the agenda this morning, so I've not had time to check that.
So okay. So maybe it is.
Okay, I'll have a look. Thank you. Raglan Natural is another verbal update, though we've also got to mention that the community-led development team is to work with Raglan Naturally to identify priorities that are already mapped in the blueprint. So you might remember a couple of years ago the blueprint plan had a few public meetings, and that set out priorities, and apparently that's... this community-led development team is going to work with Raglan Naturally on those priorities.
Okay.
Yeah, that's probably good news, but again, it's something which is developing very slowly. Maybe plans need to develop slowly. Depends how much pressure there is from the various staff and how influential they are, I think, as to how these things go ahead. But
yeah,
it's probably good news. There's mention of the food waste consultation, which closes in just over a week's time, 1st of April.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether there's going to be any discussion of that. There's also mention of the eco-village, catch up with the team, there was something on Facebook a day or two ago about that. I think there's a meeting coming up at the end of this week, isn't there?
Yeah, so this is, for anyone wondering, there is a proposal to start an eco-village in Whangaroa. It's very early days is what I would say about that. I think they need to have discussions with council about, is it feasible under the rules even? You know, that's a point of debate at the moment from what I've heard. Not firsthand either, by the way, but that is certainly an issue.
Yeah, I think it's probably not in the council's zoning for housing, which, although greatly expanded in that area, doesn't quite cover that site. So that's probably one of the issues. But they can always make exceptions to that, or they could always have a special plan change, which is what Rangitahi did. So there's various ways around that one. There's also our new community board member, Kiri, has been involved in discussions on COVID-19 mental health toolkit booklets, and she's talking about setting up something on Instagram about that, so it's going to be interesting to hear what she's got to say on that.
Okay, that COVID-19, the mental health toolkit booklets is something that Ruth Gibbs did, and we have an interview somewhere in our archive about that with Ruth. So, and someone brought one into the studio last month, so they do exist now. It was a proposal at the time.
This is a matter of publicising it then, I think, and getting it more widely known. Yes. Unfortunately, not everybody listens to your interviews. So
it's astonishing. It's astonishing, isn't it, John?
Yeah. We ought to introduce a dictatorship, which requires listening to Aaron every morning.
No, I'm not sure about that. I'm really not sure. Discretionary fund?
The discretionary fund's now open for anyone to apply any time. And they've still got over $11,000 left in it, so they get it topped up in July. So they might well be happy to give out money if you've got some bright ideas on what to spend it on, whether it's a civil defence plan or anything else.
Yeah, okay. So that's out there for community groups. And you do need to be a kind of a recognised group. It can't be an individual for that as well. That's one thing I do know. But talk to community board chairperson Gabrielle Parsons. She can get you on the path for that.
I don't think there are any rules now, because the council used to have that rule, but now it's been given to the community board in their discretion rather than having to go through the council rules. I suspect that it could be given to individuals, but
okay.
that's yet to be clarified.
It does have to be kind of a charitable, like a non-profit organisation. I think that's still true. Couldn't be given it to a business to make a profit with.
Can't apply for it for my holiday fund or something like that.
No, John. But you're welcome to try.
I don't think I'll bother. There's lots of other things to do. It always mystifies me that the community board agenda doesn't include several things that council have talked about, like the sewage plant consent is coming up, but that's not on the agenda.
So where did you learn about that?
Well, the council had a meeting at the end of last month, about 3 weeks ago, which apparently discussed it at the public excluded meeting. I think we did mention it when we last talked a couple of weeks ago, but we still don't know anything about that, and it's still not on the community board agenda, and yet I would have thought it was an important item to get at least whatever update they can about it.
So this is, you've got a note here that it's the wastewater treatment plant consent application preparation project for the discharge option. So that's a part of it.
Yeah, but probably the most important part of it, because people are interested in whether it's discharged to the middle of the harbour or whether it's discharged to various bits of land around the harbour.
And that's so the answer to the question of, are they going to pipe it far out to sea, like a kilometre out to sea or something?
Well, into the middle of the harbour channel is what the proposal was.
Okay.
But there were also proposals which seemed to have equal weight to put it on various bits of land, including Wainui Reserve and the golf course.
But if they are preparing to apply for consent, does that mean they've made a decision?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Okay, all right.
Which is why it would be good to have it on the community board agenda, but it's not.
Yeah, okay. People might want to ask that question at the Zoom meeting Wednesday, 1:30. The link is on our Facebook page. Just mention that. John, oh, what's this next? The Resource Management Enabling Housing Supply and Other Matters Amendment Act 2021.
Yeah, I thought this was an interesting discussion that was on the agenda for the Council's Policy Committee, pointing out that they were not sure how that new government legislation was going to go, because the government seemed, I think we have discussed before, whether Raglan was going to be affected by it, and came to the conclusion that Raglan was too small to be affected by it. But now council staff seem to be saying, well, yeah, we could have up to three houses of three stories each, up to 11 metres without the resource consent.
That legislation. So, yeah, so I just had a conversation with Fiona McNabb, Whangarei Raglan Affordable Housing Project, yesterday. We were just talking about the district plan and what it allowed, and it didn't seem to allow for anything. Like, there was some intensification allowed for around the district, but we didn't think it was going to affect Raglan. Maybe you're saying this will affect Raglan and we can get a bit of intensification and get some more houses built?
Well, that's what the report from staff said, because they said it's probably Raglan and Te Kohwhata, even though in 2018 our population wasn't big enough. But they said, however, the land supply in the operative district plan zoning, as well as the proposed district plan decisions, allow for population of over 10,000.
Right.
And therefore it would come within that legislation. So they're speculating, but I thought it was worth drawing attention to that speculation, because it could well happen.
So I guess this is going to be contentious. People won't want three-story houses. Like, this is a serious development in large parts of Raglan, but there might be areas where it is okay to do, or not so. Yeah. Not so intrusive.
Well, that's the issue with lots of the planning, that if you have a rule that says, yes, things can go ahead without permission, then they can happen where they're inappropriate as well as where they're appropriate.
Yeah, so this is the government's... Well, actually, National Party was part of this as well, weren't they? A full house agreement on a solution out of the housing crisis. Of course, if the government doesn't spend any money and get into the building themselves, it's not going to help, but it'll help. Well, it won't solve everything. It'll do a little bit, I guess, John. It'll enable a little bit to happen, but it's still relying on the market to deliver.
Yep. Well, there's still the discussions going on the district plan, so further applications to join in with the discussions on it are still going in.
So Fiona said that Whangarei Raglan Affordable Housing Project, RAP, we'll call them RAP, is not going to, even though most of what they said was ignored, they're not going to object, especially because, John, did you see what I mentioned before, the housing workshop that they had at council? Everyone there, including down to the mayor, or up to the mayor, depending on your perspective, was saying, yes, council needs to do something about the housing crisis. There's been a real shift in attitude about that.
Yeah, well, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and my cynical response was that was just a way of developing one of the Perry's gravel pits, but and that cynical response is still mine. But and I don't know any more about that, so yeah. And all these things come into it.
Well, even if that part is true, what you say, it's still the fact that a rich, powerful person is talking about it has certainly got the attention of the more conservative councillors in the district council. And all the work that RAP has done, and all the people in our district have done in our region, trying to get attention to the housing crisis, is starting to have an effect, I think. I'm not saying that things are going to change tomorrow at all, but, you know, like, there's a little bit of hope there now, although not with the government.
Yeah, I noticed we've only got a couple of minutes to the end of your show. One of the other things that seems to me missing from the community board agenda is the meeting of the Waters Governance Board just over a week ago.
Oh, yeah. Were you at that?
It's available on the YouTube.
Oh, this is right. Yeah, this is the whole district Waters Governance Board, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, because this is the interface between Watercare, which is the group which is doing the sewage upgrade and the water supply upgrades and stormwater and everything, and the council, because Watercare is mainly an Auckland council organisation, but they've been contracted by back at a district to do their waters as well. And that they're looking at things like the sewage works, saying that they're awaiting updated data from the Nero PS, which I think is the Wenera Street pumping station, before progressing development. And I don't understand why that should affect it. So it would be interesting to have had a report to the community board and to have that question raised and answered. It would also be interesting to know about the what's happening over at Tiako on the opposite side of the harbour, because I didn't realise that they were doing that. They were taking water around there by tanker, which is costing over $100,000 a year.
Is there a council water supply over there?
There was until their pump broke, and they say that if they were going to fix that, that would be an even more expensive option. So that they've got various options that they're looking at, including what they seem to be favouring of just giving people water tanks and filtration and ultraviolet cleansing equipment.
I'm really surprised at that. I just thought when you went over to Tiako, the other side of the harbour, you were on your own.
Yeah, I don't understand why it was set up, but I think it was part of the resource consent for that area when it was subdivided about 20, 30 years ago.
Right.
That they set up a water treatment plant, and the council inherited that, and presumably it's lasted 20 or 30 years, but now it's packed up and they need to do something about it.
So when we refer to Tiako, we're not referring to the old Tiako township, which is further north. We're just referring to the immediate side of the harbour here, aren't we, the other side?
Yes, yep.
Okay.
So that it seems, I know it's not in a community board area, but I think one of the options is that they actually pipe water under the harbour from Raglan.
Really? Is that a real, is someone suggesting that?
Well, yeah, they say it would cost $3 to $6 million, but they're also talking about it being drilled. And I don't understand why you can't just put an alkathene pipe on the bottom of a harbour and do it that way, but this may be an explanation. I'm not an engineer.
It's shifting sands, which is why it would have to be really deep. Drilled that. Why would you spend $3 to $6 million on that for a few houses unless you're anticipating a lot of future development over there, which I haven't seen on any of that. Like, that 50-year plan doesn't show anything over that side of the harbour, so I can't see them spending that much on it. Can you,
I think they've just looked into what all the options are and right. Set them in a report. So without saying, yeah, we're going for this one. And as I say, the most likely one they're going for is the cheapest, which is just adding water tanks.
Yeah, okay. House. All right, let's not get excited about that.
The other item that we've talked about before is the buses not being on time. I think the community board ought to talk about that sometime. And there's a whole load of things which they've dropped, which have been on their agenda from time to time.
We won't.
And again, if people are interested in seeing that list, have a look at our Facebook page and the link from it.
So, folks, we've just been talking to John. It's the end of the show. The community board meeting is tomorrow, or if you're listening at 8 o'clock on Wednesday morning, it's today, 1:30. If you want to be part of the Zoom forum at 1:30, you can go to our Facebook page, Raglan Community Radio, and find the Zoom link there. If you don't do Zoom or any of that technology, I'd suggest giving Gabrielle Parson a call. Is she in the... I know their contact details are on the council website. That's probably the best.
So if you go to the council website and have a look at the meetings and the Raglan Community Board meetings, you'll find the links there for email and phone for all the community board members.
Right. Yeah. So that's the way to do it. So yeah, if you don't want to get on the Zoom, Gabrielle, I'm sure be happy to talk to you and bring something to the rest of the community board's attention. John, you on the air tonight?
Yep. Hopefully. I've had some technical problems recently, but hopefully.
Oh, yeah. Well, give me a call. Give me a call. Give me a call right away if there's a problem. We'll sort
it. Good.
Yeah.
So I'll probably see you on Zoom tomorrow.
Yes, indeed. All right, John. Thanks for your time this morning.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, folks. Yes, John Lawson right there. It's the end of the show for the day. Don't forget to check out our new fabulous podcasting system and website, RaglanRadio.com, or the new web address, RaglanCommunityRadio.nz. I'm just going to keep reminding people about that. All the that interview I've done with John, if you want to go and pick back over something we just talked about, you came in halfway through, it will be later on today. It'll appear right there at the top of the front page of the website. So all the podcasts, recent podcasts, are right there for people to catch up with. And not just my show, too. We've got Musical Journeys there. We've got the kids' shows, Friday Freak Zone, Over the Fence, Attack on Thursday. They're on the front page at the moment. Check it out. And I will see you all again tomorrow.